Blog Talk Radio.
It's Kelly here, and have some interesting news for you. La Frontera is leaving town. And the reason is, of course, financial. And they have confirmed, according to the Sun News, their departure. We can come and talk, go back and talk about that a little bit when Walt Rubel gets here. But it is kind of a sad ending to basically this situation with when the state government shut down, had ordered this audit and shut down the mental health and then brought in outsiders. I think it speaks to the fact that it's easy to make a kind of a rash decision on something, but what is the and I'm not saying that the state did not believe that there was a problem, but it turns out after the audit, it didn't seem to be much of a problem. And, you know, a local company, as opposed to an outside company, has an easier job of understanding the market and everything. There is this article in here that the recall attempt against City Councilor Small has failed. The supplemental petition was put in. A total of 839 valid signatures were required, and a total of 625 signatures were verified, and that was 214 signatures short. And so anyway, that's, I guess, another, and I don't, it doesn't look to me like any of these, I haven't been contacted by New Mexicans for a Better Tomorrow in a couple of weeks, so I am not sure which way it's going, but they tried to get rid of Gil Sorg, Olga Pedroza, and Nathan Small, and it looks to me that all three of those failed. So I will report back if there's anything else I find out about it. So, all right. So when Walt Rubel gets in, we'll talk to him a little bit more about La Frontera, but it is out of town, and we're going to have to find out what the future holds for mental health, et cetera, in the state. sometimes the devil you know is better than the devil you don't know. Although I don't really, and we had Roque Garcia on the show, and et cetera, but it just seems to me like it was kind of a hasty reaction to whatever the perceived problem was. All right, what people are talking about around America right now, to a large extent, the Tulsa officer who shot the black man, and it turns out that he was a 73-year-old, what they one story had referred to as a sugar daddy. Now, he had given a lot of goodies to the police department. He was a reserve cop, and he wanted to get onto the, you know, he wanted some action. He wanted to go out and get involved in some police work, and it turned out horrifically, and it just adds to this sense, although apparently he thought he was grabbing a taser when he was trying to stop this guy. He accidentally pulled out his gun. That's the story anyway. Here's a little bit from ABC News on this. I mean, it's shocking, really. I wouldn't assume that there was any racism involved unless this you could prove it. But, I mean, it makes you wonder, you know, I mean, what is this? What is the age limit for an officer? What is a 73-year-old guy doing trying to wrestle with a pretty muscular suspect? And then how is it that he doesn't know the difference between the pistol and the taser? I mean, isn't there an obvious, you know? And I mean, if you're watching this video, this guy's running away. It's not like it was in the middle of a firefight or something. So, I mean, I understand there's going to be a lawsuit on this, and there's going to be a lot of money involved, so. In any event, I think this is terrible. Now, I read this article, this is quite a while ago, a few months ago, but this article that said basically when we were first getting into all these cop shootings with Brown in St. Louis, that there are other countries that are pretty big that are, you know, first world countries like Germany, where there's hardly any shootings or killings by the police. And they have obviously in Europe have a totally different view of, deadly force and guns and everything. Now, in England, where pistols are not allowed, they're illegal, there's not as many. But, you know, I mean, on the other hand, if you read the statistics, you'll see when they got rid of pistols, violence didn't go down. It went up by 300%. So this is kind of a complicated issue. I don't think you're ever going to see police in America not carrying pistols, you know? This is just different than Europe. And trust me, the police in these various countries do have access to weapon they needed. All right, let's. It's 6:31. It is the day of Lincoln's assassination, 150 years ago, and the 14th. You're listening to AM Las Cruces on 1450 KOB. This is Kelly O'Connell. Got a little bit of levity here, a little bit of Rodney Dangerfield from The Tonight Show, late great comedian. Kelly here, and so we've got some headlines for you. Marco Rubio is running, claiming that Hillary Clinton was so yesterday, it's not even funny, that we're at a generational moment, and Romney's supporters, in the meanwhile, are embracing another big figure out of Florida, which is Jeb Bush. Jeb Bush is, I guess, everybody's candidate for another center candidate following on the heels of Romney and John McCain. Bush battle against Marchio is starting to warm up, and it's a battle over Latino voters, which will stretch across the United States. And Marco Rubio, who's new to relatively new to national politics, has said that he is not going to wait his turn. Couple of other headlines for you. Students are not ready for Hillary. And do you think that Hillary is just done? 523-1450. I think that she is somebody that you cannot discount. You can't cross off the list because she's got a lot of staying power. And if you look at all the various scandals that she survived, she's obviously an expert on coming back. So the vice president is saying he has not decided yet whether he's going to run for president. The question is, who is asking him to run for president? Now, we have got these headlines. Illegal minors charged with serious crimes, including murder and rape, capital murder and rape, first-degree rape. A Pope Francis effect leading to exorcism. Boom. Vatican is warning over beautiful young vampires and satanic yoga. And a surge in young people dabbling in the occult. And as we've been talking about, and I mentioned to you this little backdrop of atheism, there seems to be a lot of interest in things like atheism, paganism, the occult and stuff. And although the Christians claim to have the largest, and demographers will tell you that Christians are the largest group in America, you don't see necessarily a lot of pushback in this stuff. So, and maybe the pushback is just not, doesn't make it into the media. All right, a former running back, Lawrence Phillips, who was came out of Nebraska, is a very troubled guy who had, I think, dragged his girlfriend down the stairs by the hair. He made it into the NFL. He was one of the top running backs in the country, but now he's in a Central California prison, and the Kern Valley State Prison, that they believe that he killed his cellmate. He was also didn't just play for the Rams and the Dolphins, but he also played in Europe. Anyway, he's in a lot of trouble. And so let us take another break, and I want to come back I want to get into these couple of stories, a little bit into the illegal story, and then a little bit into the exorcism type things, and then mention atheism for you, just to stir the pot before Walt Rubel comes on. 523-1450 at 642. It's AM Las Cruces on 1450 KOBE. I'm Kelly O'Connell, and the weather is it's 42 degrees right now. It's going to be a high of 70, a low of 51 tonight. A little bit chilly last night. We will be right back on KOBE. 523-1450 to call in. Hey, it's Kelly here, and of course, and here is from the Washington Times. There is going to be a surge, and there is a surge already, of unaccompanied minors coming over the border, and many fleeing from the domestic abuse or gang violence, economic troubles in Central America, riding that train up through Mexico. There is a problem, though. There's so many of these children are getting into trouble over here. The administration says it was overwhelmed by last summer's surge, which brought more than 60,000 unaccompanied minors. Now, if you were a person who was involved in child prostitution or trying to get young girls into it, wouldn't you go down to the border and just wait? Anyway, 60,000 came over the border, traveling without a parent in 2014, and there's going to be more, I believe, in 2015. And what happens when they get here is that the system is really not set up to handle it. And it's exposing many loopholes in this system, and this is from the article, from the law which requires most of the children to be turned over to social workers, to immigration authorities in the court system, which allows most of them to abscond, never showing up to be deported, to the lack of a safety net to help the children once they're free in the country. The cases suggest a broken process nearly from start to finish, with some children getting lost and others being released because of overcrowding, only to reappear when they're before a judge for a bigger crime. So they're probably, as you can imagine, if they're not checking them at the border, then they are not, they don't know what their background is, and they don't know if they're involved with a gang or whatever. So we've got a real situation on our hands. And if you're the kind of a person who believes that these individuals need to be here no matter what, then what is the upshot of this? What is what is the administration doing to protect us? What is the purpose of the administration? What is their policy? And then what is the goal of the administration? Some people will just tell you it is to cause social unrest and to get more Democratic voters into the booths over the coming decades. Other people will tell you it's for the absolute collapse of America. And people on the left, who you ask about this, I think will say something along the lines of, we've got to help these people. But where's the strategy? If we've got a relatively safe country, why do we want to make it less safe to allow these people to come in here? And, I'm sure people out there say it's worth the risk. But if it's worth the risk, what is America gaining from bringing them in? Because obviously, we couldn't bring everybody in the whole world into America. Therefore, there's got to be a limit to how many people that come in. And further, there has to be some sort of an imprint on the strategy. And it seems like we're failing at every level. And just because someone is elected the president of the United States doesn't mean that they get to do whatever they want. Everybody agrees with that. The question is, what can we do about this situation? If the American people decide that we have to have illegals come in, can we not do it in a safer way? You know? All right, so shifting gears here a little bit, the Catholic Church has seen an uprise in fervency or in belief, according to the Telegraph, UK Telegraph. It's called the Pope Francis effect. And there's a resurgence in faith among rank-and-file Catholics, according to the paper. But in addition to that, there's a boom in exorcisms. And the Argentinian pontiff, his fire and brimstone language and frequent references to the devil have helped bring the issue of Satan and Satanism back into the minds of the faithful. And so dioceses in the United Kingdom, Italy, and Spain, and elsewhere have noticed an increase in the number of people claiming to be possessed. And now there are apparently many priests in training to be involved in exorcism. A week-long exorcism conference was held this week at the Pontifical University of Regina Apostolorum in Rome. It's endorsed by the Vatican. It's being attended by around 160 Catholic priests from around the world who insist that Satan is alive and well, and he is currently using his minions, his followers, his demons to possess people. And here's from Father Cesar Trujillo, a Mexican priest trained as an exorcist. He says, Pope Francis talks about the devil all the time, and that has certainly raised awareness about exorcisms, but all Latin Americans have this sensibility. For them, the existence of the devil is part of their faith. And in last October, the new Pope said that he admired the priests who were fighting against the devil's work. Now, a British exorcist priest from Birmingham said, quote, until a few years ago, a significant number of people in the church didn't believe in the devil, but people are now going back to the scriptures, they're studying them, and they're starting to believe. Pope Francis has given a certain amount of encouragement to that. A few years ago, at least half the dioceses in England and Wales did not have an exorcist. Now, pretty much all of them do. All dioceses have an exorcist. Isn't that amazing? All right, so what are the symptoms of being possessed? According to Father Trukui, who's in the Diocese of Chur, a city in eastern Switzerland, he's done about 100 exorcisms. Here's the symptoms. They include obsessive behavior. He says, quote, I once treated a woman who combed her hair 8 hours a day and a man who was obsessed with self-pleasuring. He did it every day many times. Some people are mentally ill and do not need exorcism, but others do, and there are some classic signs. People who speak in ancient tongues, for instance, other people have supernatural strength when they are in a state of possession. It might take 4 men to hold down a slightly built woman. In some cases, people are able to levitate. Folks, what do you think about that? 523-1450. And addictions are also considered a sign of possession, or can be. And during this exorcism training session, they will listen to lectures by Catholic prelates on occultism, black magic, and Satanism, angels and demons and Holy Scripture, and criminal aspects of Satanism, which seems to beg the question, can you be a Satanist and be law-abiding? Monsignor Luigi Neri, the Archbishop of Ferrara in the northern region of Emilia-Romagna, has said there is a reason for exorcisms. It's tied to atheism and consumerism. And he says one of the main jobs of the church is to fight the devil. He says evil exists and poisons the human experience. It is a challenge and a provocation. And, of course, the Vatican warning about beautiful, young Satanists. You can hardly blame them. All right, we'll take a break. 6:53, Kelly O'Connell Show. And it is the 14th of April. The 150 years ago today, Abraham Lincoln was assassinated. 523-1450 to call in. We will be back. It's Kelly here. Now, on the theme of atheism, just a little introduction here from William Lane Craig on what's going on out there, New Atheism in a Meaningless Universe. just a little touch of this right here.
I told you I was talking about anything. So, just mentioning it.
Okay, so that's just a little bit of the introduction from that clip. And got Walt Rubel, who's coming in at 7. We're going to talk about some local stuff, maybe a little bit of atheism too, what the heck. And we have celebrated, or at least noted, I guess celebration is the wrong word, but celebrated the life of Lincoln, and today is the date of his assassination. And what an extraordinary person. And you heard Newt Gingrich say, probably the smartest guy to ever be in the White House, a brilliant man. And anyway, he changed the history of the United States and the world by helping fight against slavery. Kelly O'Connell, it is 6:59 on the button, and take you out with a little bit of Billy Joel. And we'll be back after the break on the hour on KOBE, AM 1450, AM Las Cruces. What's up, man? Yeah, but we don't have to talk about that. Maybe a little bit on La Frontera. And if you want to bring up some other local issues, too. Yeah, let's talk about that. Well, it's good she signed that, huh? Let me go get a little coffee. You want some coffee? Oh, okay. It is a grind, man. It's something you either adapt to. It's got. Yeah. I used to do 6 days a week because I had this show that I did on the internet. It was actually surprisingly popular in terms of downloads. We'd get a couple of thousand downloads a week. Mm-hmm. What is Mike Swigger doing? Is he still broadcasting somewhere? Swigger? Well, they changed the format. It's a country station. But I mean, I think that whatever dream they had of... Oh, I ran after
Yeah. Were you ever on his show? The circulation, well, I guess the circulation of the bulletin is not the same as Sunday's because it's free. Does everybody in the city get a copy of the bulletin? Well,
he took what was a horrible, trashy, nothing paper and turned it into what it, you know, I can say is today, but the truth is it was better a couple of years ago than it is today. That's not a knock against Richard, it's just the industry.
Yeah, man, it's got to be nerve-wracking to be in the industry and see shrinking every year
trying
to figure out what the
nerve-wracking. Yeah, that's a nice way to put it.
There's so much content. My problem is psychopathy.
Yeah.
Although I can get to those articles if I repost the title.
I was going to say there are ways to everything Swiss cheese, unintentionally so. If you're an older, less sophisticated person, you just get frustrated and they hope get out your credit card. Yeah.
But it
almost all, you know, all of our good stories are on our Facebook page.
There's a lot of more citizen bloggers out there that are writing.
Yeah.
But these, what I'm kind of interested in is some of the national news and some major papers that have been saying for years.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the cost of the investigative reporting, it seems like it's disappeared.
I think that's true. I mean, you still have the Associated Press and you still have, you know, the big papers still have foreign bureaus, but. No, it's the same with TV and radio. I'm sure is the same way too. I mean, it's you know, the whole thing about making the tax base flatter and broader. I mean, that's what's happened to journalism, really.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to read the Gettysburg Address.
Okay.
It's Kelly here. Good morning to you. It is Tuesday, the 14th of April. It is also the day that Lincoln was shot 150 years ago. And so he goes down in history as one of the greatest leaders of all time. What he achieved was extraordinary when you think of the amount of pressure that he was under. And the forces in the United States coming together into a civil war. And by the way, I do have with me in the studio Walt Rubel. Good morning, Walt.
Good morning.
Thanks. Good to have you back on the air.
Yeah. No, this is an hour earlier, so it's you know, kind of dragging myself in a little bit, but it's I'm glad to be back on.
I know the feeling.
Yeah, I know you.
I definitely do. But Lincoln is a president that doesn't see. He's not as old as a founder, right?
Oh no, right.
And so there's something surprisingly modern about Lincoln.
Is he the James Dean? I mean, if he didn't get assassinated, yeah. If he died an old man, can he be Abraham Lincoln?
Well, of course not.
Yeah.
But the way, you know, we tend to love transitional figures.
And oh, yeah.
Even people like Lenin and Stalin who have are associated with crimes, they still have a certain cachet because they came in and changed everything.
That's right. But the Time Man of the Year thing, where it's not necessarily an honor.
Right.
Yeah.
Adolf Hitler. But all right. So I was saying to Walt, I want to read this Gettysburg Address here for you, test my reading skills here. But there was a time when they didn't know who was going to win the war.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And the fate of the free world, if you want to say, kind of hung in the balance there.
And news didn't move nearly as quickly back then.
Yeah.
And so even when you had wins on the battlefield, it took a while. And, you know, and so you're right. There was, when you're sitting in Washington, there's a lot of uncertainty.
Well, and also there was a period of time that the South seemed to be have an advantage on the battlefield, right?
That's right. Yeah.
And New Mexico's involvement in the Civil War, that is a story?
Brief, but it went for the South as well. I mean, the skirmish that we did have for, I don't know what, a couple weeks, a month or so, we were part of the Confederacy.
Now, if you see the countries, or the, pardon me, the states that pulled out to fight the North, they're all across the bottom of the seaboard, right? It would have been Texas over to Florida.
The Mason-Dixon line,
yeah.
Right, yeah.
All right, so let me do the Gettysburg Address here. And Gettysburg is this great battlefield, right, that is I guess, probably known as much for the Gettysburg Address as anything. But there were signal and important battles in the war. And we're talking about days and days of people standing in fields shooting it, just shooting each other in the cannon.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, the Civil War... The most brutal, I think. I mean, I know people talk about World War One and the mustard gas and all that, but trench warfare, bayonets fixed. Would you run out of muskets? Or they were shooting. What were they shooting? Not bullets, but
the balls.
Yeah.
And
right.
Those
and I think when you run out of those, then it's just bayonets and the rifle butt and just, have at it.
But if you got a scratch in one of those battles, you could die from infection
because the
knowledge of medicine was very primitive at those times.
Yeah, that's right.
Anyway, let me give it a shot. Gettysburg Address. 67 years ago, our fathers brought forth on this continent a new nation conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. Now we are engaged in a great civil war, testing whether that nation or any nation so conceived and so dedicated can long endure. We met on a great battlefield of that war. We have come to dedicate a portion of that field as a final resting place for those who gave their lives that that nation might live. It is altogether fitting and proper that we should do this, but in a larger sense, we cannot dedicate, we cannot consecrate, nor can we hallow this ground. The brave men living and dead who struggled here have consecrated it far above our poor power to add or detract. The world will little note nor long remember what we say here, but it can never forget what they did here. It is for us, the living, rather to be dedicated here to the unfinished work which with they who fought here have thus so far nobly advanced. It is rather for us to be here dedicated to the great task remaining before us, that from these honored dead we take increased devotion to that cause for which they gave the last full measure of devotion, that we here highly resolved that these dead shall not have died in vain, that this nation under God shall have a new birth of freedom, and that the government of the people, by the people, for the people shall not perish from the earth.
Written on what, the back of an envelope
during a train ride, I think.
It's just amazing.
An incredibly fertile mind that he had. And I was mentioning on the show earlier that it is historians have discovered he was influenced or read principally three books when he was growing up. One was Shakespeare's works, and the other one was the Bible, and the third one was The Lives of Plutarch or something. But deeply influenced by really profound stuff.
Yeah.
And so when he communicated to people, it was out of this depth of the greatest works, ever penned.
Did you see the movie a couple of years
ago?
The interesting thing, and I know everybody who's kind of the politics wonks today got into it for the trickery part of it and the deception part of how he essentially lied to Congress, and that's how he was able to get the Emancipation Proclamation or the Fifth Amendment? No, not Fifth, of course not. Which amendment
13th
was 13th
and 14th?
Thank you. Yeah.
Well,
anytime I have to deal with numbers, I'm in trouble.
No problem. The 13th and 14th were the application of the federal law to states.
Right. Right.
And that was after the fact. But and I hear you're kind of embarrassing me because I had said earlier he made a promise to his mother to never break the Ten Commandments and that he wasn't on record for lying.
Oh,
but okay. I guess there's no politician that doesn't lie.
Well, you know, he and Tommy Lee Jones in the movie who was playing the president of the Senate. They told stories. Well, they made promises, I guess, would be the correct way to put it, that they knew they would not be able to keep.
Yeah. I guess that kind of happens. And I guess the current president is a fan of Lincoln, and maybe he was a little bit influenced by that because this gentleman, and I'm trying to remember his name from MIT, had said, you know, we had to sell him a false bill of goods to get him to accept
it. Jonathan
Gruber.
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 Yeah, there you go.
And so I guess there is always some deception.
Politics, I think even before Lincoln, I think, you know, going back to Hamilton and Jefferson, politics is, not a gentleman's game sometimes.
But we tend to think of the founders as being more enlightened and maybe
a little bit more pure. We tend to deify them. I mean, we really do. And they were politicians. They were wealthy men protecting their interests. Now, they did so in a more broad-minded way than other wealthy men protecting their interests did at that time, and to our great benefit today. There's no question about that.
Yeah, and they took risks, and I think if they wanted to be safe, they wouldn't have been involved in the Revolution.
No, that's absolutely right. And, of course, many of them took that position, and that was the safe position.
All right, so
we'd be Canada today, right?
Right. When you think of Lincoln, though, Walt, and folks, we're talking to Walt Rubel from the Sun News. When you think of Lincoln, what the term the name Abraham Lincoln,
right.
What immediately comes into your mind? What words or thoughts?
Emancipation Proclamation. I mean, those are the first two. I mean, that is, you talk about a transformational figure. And of course, Civil War. Those two things being linked. And we are still fighting today about whether the Civil War was actually about slavery or states' rights. I mean, we will.
Well, I have to admit that when I heard Eric Holder say that we were a nation of cowards on race, I thought of the Civil War and the 500,000 men that died.
Yeah, yeah.
And that kind of obviously perturbed me a little bit. But I guess we're kind of still dealing with skirmishes that are carries over from the Civil War. I mean, we're still talking about whether the police are racist and are using unjust force, and just the recent shooting of by the 73-year-old part-time cop
in Oklahoma.
Yeah, is kind of dealing with this stuff, but it kind of makes you wonder what we would need to do to satisfy the people who say that we haven't done enough on race. What do you think?
Boy, some people will never be satisfied. What do you need to do to satisfy Al Sharpton?
Yeah.
I don't know. I can't answer that question. Yeah. I don't think there is an answer to that question.
Well, I mean, some people say he's a demagogue, and therefore he's fighting for whatever gains he can get, and he's never going to admit he's satisfied because that's not his purpose.
No, I think that's right. Let's be honest. That is his stock and trade, and so he is coming to the end of what has been a lucrative, and I think, productive in some ways, career, but more reasonable people, what will satisfy them? You know, I look at what happened in Ferguson. We just had an election there where the city council went from having one black member to having three black members.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's progress.
Well, I think representative government, it makes sense that if you have a large ethnic population,
right,
that there are people out of that community that represent them.
Right, but I also know that there are years and years of cynicism, it gets very frustrating for me looking, you know, the outside looking in, saying, why don't these people just organize and vote? You know, that you've got 70% or so, you know, not quite, of the population. All you got to do is get together and take over.
That's a phenomenal question, and also people.
The answer is, years and years and years of cynicism and distrust of the process.
But, I mean, if you don't give it a shot,
here's the same argument,
the same question from the right is that if there's 70% of the people who claim to be Christian, how can you complain every year about the people that are elected?
Yeah, no, that's a good point.
You know, and where is the Christian candidates? And where is the...
Every single one?
Yeah. Of course, everybody is going to, you know, very few people are going to claim I'm a Satanist and I'm here to represent you.
Or even an atheist.
And we do have a call here. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
This is Joe.
Hey, Joe, thanks for calling in. Hope you're having a good day. And what's on your mind?
Listen, I just wanted to correct something. New Mexico was not with the South. Texans were coming up here through New Mexico. And they fought their way all the way up north to the Battle of Glorieta Pass, which is called the Gettysburg of the West, where we drove them back, and they had to retreat all the way back to Texas.
All right, so
I just wanted to correct the
Joe. Were we
New Mexico?
Joe, were
we weren't with the South?
Were we on a side?
Yes, yes. We had the Texas troops were the Confederates, and they. We're coming up through New Mexico,
but didn't
and the federal
they win?
Troops were resisting them.
Right, right.
Who won the Battle of Glorieta? I'm just looking it up right now, but who won that?
The federal troops did because the volunteers from Colorado came down and helped, and the defeated Texans had to retreat all the way down through New Mexico. It was a great victory for New Mexico and the anti-slavery. So we weren't with the South.
Well,
that's not true.
Joe, listen, there was something that came out this a couple of years ago, but there was this debate on there was a float and there was a Confederate flag on the float, right? And locally on the I can't remember what was that?
It was in the 4th of July parade. It was the Tea Party float, and they had 7 or 8 flags that their argument was flew over New Mexico at some point in time.
All right, so Joe, what about that? What about the claim that it's a historical fact that the Confederate flag was over here because
the Tea Party puts a Confederate flag on a float doesn't mean this.
I know that history is not written by the Tea Party, but I'm just wondering what was their historical basis for doing that.
That I don't know, but there's actually they're written by a man who was with the Texas troops. And it describes the whole battle coming up through New Mexico and going all the way up to Glorieta Pass. Did you get Glorieta Pass battle on your computer?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's the typical, you know, the Wikipedia, but the Battle of Glorieta Pass fought from March 26th to 28th, 1862 in northern New Mexico territory was the decisive battle of the New Mexico campaign during the American Civil War, dubbed the Gettysburg of the West, ironically enough. A term that serves the novelist better than the historian is the note here. By some authors, it was intended as the killer blow by Confederate forces to break the Union possession of the West along the base of the Rocky Mountains. It was fought at Glorieta Pass in the Sangre de Cristo Mountains, the Blood of Christ Mountains, in what is now New Mexico, and was an important event in the history of the New Mexico territory.
Yes.
Yeah. It's fascinating.
Yes, so there's a book. It's called Rebels on the Rio Grande. It's a Civil War journal of a guy who was with the Texas troops, and his name was Don Alberts. There you go.
Okay, well, I'll look that up. That's fascinating. I really appreciate the...
Well, and thanks for the correction, too.
Thanks, Joe.
Yes, well, listen, since they talk about Gettysburg, New Mexico has a Gettysburg, too.
Yeah, I'd never even heard that before. That's fascinating.
It should be researched.
Absolutely.
Okay, take care.
I'll get into it. Thanks for the correction. Folks, we'll be right back. Kelly O'Connell, I'm here with Walt Rubel, who's just on the verge of stirring the pot a little bit. He's got an impish grin. He's got an impish grin here, so you don't want to don't touch that dial. It is 722-523-1450 to call in. It's AM Las Cruces 1450 on KOBE, and we will be right back. Good morning. It is Kelly. You're listening to AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. It is 40 degrees right now. It's 40 degrees and supposed to be near 70 today and a low of around tonight, around 50, I guess. We'll see. All right, so we're talking a little bit. I've got Walt Rubel here from the Sun News. We're talking a little bit about the Civil War and the New Mexico territory. And if you've got any knowledge on that, feel free to call in. But there was an article that actually was in the Sun News 2 years, 3 years ago. Mesilla event marks 150 years since the Civil War. And so the Gadsden Museum in Mesilla was the primary sponsor of this weekend-long event. But I don't, I mean, I really don't know much about the Civil War.
I remember the story, but I can't tell you the details or anything beyond that. So, but I think that's where that came from was the color's right, obviously, about the Battle of Glorieta Pass. But I think for a very brief number of days that there was a Confederate flag flying over Mesilla, that there was some kind of skirmish or battle there. I think that's where that came from.
Here is a little clip from oldmesilla.org. In the 1860s, news of the Civil War and also troop conflict reached Mesilla. Colonel Baylor, commander of the Confederate troops, arrived from Texas and encountered little resistance in the Mesilla Valley on July 25, 1861, when Colonel Baylor and his 220 Texas Mounted Rifles entered Mesilla. The Union troops abandoned Fort Fillmore. How shameful.
Okay, once again, a bunch of Texans riding in and causing trouble.
Much like today.
Yep.
They surrendered to the Confederate troops at San Augustine Spring, northwest of Mesilla. 2 days later, Colonel Baylor set up his immediate headquarters on Calle Principal off the plaza in the Mesilla and raised the Confederate flag at Confederate Capitol Building. All right, there you go. Maybe
okay.
That's what the Tea Party was talking about.
No, that's it. That's it.
On Calle de Guadalupe, where the old theater is today, he established the name of the Confederacy, the short-lived territory of Arizona, and Mesilla as its capital. The Grand Plaza, where the Confederate troops established their headquarters, was located in the area of the school. After the Battle of Glorieta in March of 1862, being short of supplies, the Confederate troops retreated to Texas. This ended the Civil War conflict in New Mexico. Well, I mean, I think it upset people to see the Confederate flag, but maybe according to that history, it was accurate, technically.
Well, that was what the creator of the float said, so, you know.
All right, so let's let's talk a little bit about La Frontera.
Yeah, pulling out, which I think is not a huge surprise. What I guess is a surprise is why they weren't able to make it after getting actually more money from the state in terms of, you know, a better deal than the two that got booted out, the two local ones. I without being able to look at their books, you can't really answer that question. But
there must have had higher overhead, or do you think it wasn't worth the extra work for them, the extra?
Well, I don't know. What I do know is that they came in within a very short period of time. They started making cuts. They started slashing workforces. They consolidated into one building. They were telling us pretty much all along that they were losing money. They were losing millions of dollars, which brings up a whole lot of questions. Is that because of mismanagement? Or if not, if they're not able to make it on what the state was reimbursing, and what is going to make the next guy come along do any better? I think there's a great big picture here that I'll be honest, I don't understand.
All right,
but
well,
I think
ask,
needs to be looked into.
Talking to Walt Rubel here from the Sun News. Walt, I got to ask you kind of a hardball question. Do you look at the decision of the governor and say short-sighted, reactionary, that type of thing?
Well, what she, and here again, what she would say is that she had no choice, was because of the Affordable Care Act, there are new restrictions on Medicaid funding, and if there are credible allegations of fraud, that at that point a state has no choice. Now, there are others who understand that law much better than I do who say, no, that's not exactly true, that there is more flexibility than she's suggesting there. And so that's the only caveat I give before answering the question, which is, yes, that's what I think.
Okay, so we didn't gain from La Frontera. We lost because we did have these providers. This is why I think that this idea of what the federalism principle is local rule,
yeah,
is more efficient and is better informed. If we had these mental health groups that had grown up locally, they've got to know better than an outside group.
That's what I think. But, you know, I mean, once again, to the governor's defense, I'm not here to defend the governor, but what she would say was that we did an audit. It came back. It showed $36 million of fraud. We had to act. That's what she would, and so I know that that's what
all
she
right,
would say.
All right. So what was the final, you know, the final take on the audit was what? What was found? What was the story?
Well, it has finally been released by the Attorney General's office, and so it is online now. He is in the process of looking at the two local ones. They are among four that are supposed to be next to be released. I think that's going to happen within the next couple of months is what they're saying. It is very difficult to take a look at what is online, what has been released, without knowing all of the codes and you know, how to go through those spreadsheets to see what they are alleging. I mean, you can obviously read the summary, but putting the summary with the spreadsheets, it not only takes some time, but it also takes knowledge of what those codes are. So I guess the short answer, and I'm giving you a very long short answer, but the short answer is that the Attorney General is going to give us his take on that within the next couple of months.
And what do you suspect if you had to guess what's coming down the pike?
I suspect he won't find any fraud. He hasn't yet with any of the other ones he's looked into, and I suspect that'll be the case here.
Well, that's kind of frustrating.
It is very frustrating. And despite what the governor has said, you know, she talks about this seamless transition, and you know, they did with it everything within their power to make it a seamless transition. But you're dealing with an incredibly vulnerable population,
mm-hmm,
here.
Mm-hmm.
And so even something as simple as changing therapists, you know, you may still have an appointment on the same date and time and place. But, you know, if you're slashing staff and you have a new person listening to you when you show up, that could be a huge difference for those people.
Yeah, absolutely.
And there was trouble getting them medication right when this transaction first happened. They didn't have their pharmacy license because they were coming in from Arizona.
Was there any, you know, mental health crises that you knew, individual stories that were resultant?
Nothing. Crises is the wrong word. We heard a lot of anecdotal stories about people being very frustrated about,
yeah,
you know, not being able to get their medicine on time, not being able to see the therapist that they had developed this trust with.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of a story where they then went out and did something, no.
Jumped off a bridge,
yeah,
or something.
Right.
Okay. Folks, we'll take another break. You're talking to Walt Rubel, and 523-1450, if you have a question about anything that's going on in town that Walt might know about or anything that the paper has been covering, it's your chance. And it is 733. You're listening to AM Las Cruces on 1450 KOBE. I'm Kelly O'Connell. 523-1450 to call in, and we will be – oh, and we do have a call here. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
This is James Davis.
James Davis, thank you for calling in. I hope you're having a wonderful day. And what's on your mind?
Well, man, I'll tell you what, my friend. I started to try to do therapy at La Frontera right when they were doing the changeover. I didn't know about it. You know what I mean? I didn't know they had run Border. Was that the name of the place? Border Mental Health?
It was Southwest Counseling, and probably Southwest Counseling is where you were.
Okay, well, it was called Border Mental Health there in Deming, New Mexico.
Okay.
Sir, let me tell you what the deal is. When they came in, this is on the governor. When they came in, they gutted that place. Sir, I could not get an appointment. I was one of those people that just came just very damn close to going and jumping off a bridge.
That's terrible.
Well, I couldn't get an appointment. I would get an appointment with the therapist, and they'd call me 2 days before and say, sorry, they had to cancel him because he's got a meeting with the big wheels. Well, let me tell you what happened this time. my therapist told me that the reason they pulled out is because New Mexico, the way they paid, they couldn't, La Frontera couldn't pay their bills because New Mexico wouldn't pay them.
That is what we heard, was the state was late in making payments to La Frontera, and that was part of their problem.
That is the problem, sir. And La Frontera, I was seeing the man, my therapist, was the man that was the director over the one in, and this is another part of the problem. They had to, the New Mexico wouldn't pay enough money to hire more people. That's why they had to slash all the help that they had. And when they were doing that, man, they couldn't get a therapist to come to Deming.
Well, how did that affect your ability to get your medication?
Sir, I won't take that crap. I won't take medication because that's all they want to do is pump your ass full of dope and then send you on down the way.
That's
no good.
This pharmaceutical cure has been tied into a lot of these, the shootings and this guy that was flying this plane that crashed.
Yeah.
But all of these people were on psychiatric meds.
Go ahead.
I've dealt with post-traumatic stress disorder my whole life, PTSD. I've had it since I was a kid.
Ooh.
And I did know one thing. I have done nothing in my life that was more profitable, more beneficial than sitting down with a real good therapist.
Wow.
It changed my life, so I'm going to say that right now.
Yeah.
I've done over 100 hours of therapy now in the last 5 years.
All right, so now that these guys are pulling out, what is going to be the impact on you as far as you can tell?
Well, what it did was I pulled out, I went ahead and cause I knew it was coming. My therapist said, hey, man, we're probably fixing to pull out of here. We don't think that, he's just telling me this personally, that the New Mexico is not wanting to negotiate at all. They're not wanting to play ball. He said that we're probably going to pull out. Well, let me tell you, you were exactly right. You get somebody that can finally do therapy with somebody else, and you better stick with them because they are so far and so few in between. The majority of those therapists that are in those places need to be sitting in a chair.
That's funny. That is funny. Well, James, I got to take a break. Was there anything else?
Well, I just wanted to tell the governor of New Mexico that she's done a piss-poor job on this mental health issue in New Mexico, and mainly because of that, I would never, ever, ever consider voting for that woman at all, ever.
Okay. Well, I really appreciate the call. It's very interesting information, and I wish you the best of luck in your future in the therapy and getting better.
Now, I'd like to tell you one more thing.
Sure.
I'm sitting down here at the Travel Center truck stop in my little bitty RV. I had to move out of my place, and I'm totally out of gas and totally broke.
Well, folks, anybody got a couple of bucks in their pocket, get over to the truck stop.
Yeah, I'm sitting across the street, man. I'm trying to go somewhere and find me some work. I'm tired of being on welfare.
Well, God bless you, and good luck, folks. If anybody got a couple of bucks in your pocket, you can lend this gentleman. And what are you wearing, a hat or a shirt or anything people would recognize?
Sir, I'm sitting in a little bitty RV across the street from the Travel Center. It's a big empty lot, little bitty RV sitting out there. You can't miss me.
All right. Hang in there, man. Thanks for the call. Have a great day.
Y'all have a good mental health day, too, sir.
Thank you. God bless you. Bye-bye. All right, folks, take you into a break here. An interesting call. Thanks for calling in, James, and we'll be right back. Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450 to call in.
There's nothing wrong.
Hey, Kelly here, and I'm, of course, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. And it is I read that the temperature went down a couple of degrees down to 40, so it should be clear today, and then a high 68, low around 50. But got guest in the studio today from the Sun News and Mr. Rubel. And I was talking to you off the air, and I asked you if there was anything that you really wanted to mention, and you said the civil forfeiture bill.
Yeah, it was one of the last bills that the governor signed in what I think everybody agrees was a pretty unproductive session. But this one was one of those amazing bills where everybody came together. Paul Gessing from the Rio Grande Foundation was, you know, in there with the ACLU slugging it out on the same side on this one. And really the last person standing in the way was the governor, who there was, I mean, despite all of this pressure coming from both sides, there was some real question, because that goes against, you know, her, everything about her is law enforcement.
Yeah.
And, you know, we forget that this is going to be taking money away from the agency that Amy Orlando is now the head attorney for. And so, you know, there was pressure coming
all right.
in there.
All right. So that's a great thing, and the people that were irritated at Connolly,
yes,
including myself, and the various criticisms that I made on the radio, I've got to ask you, Walt Rubel, who is running for DA?
Who is going to run for DA?
Yeah, I mean, you bring up Amy's name, and is there any scuttlebutt out there? What's the speculation?
The speculation, I think there will be a primary. That's the speculation.
All right. So it's not an uncontested trail back for Mark.
That's the speculation.
There has been a lot of criticism of Mark. I haven't mentioned a lot of it.
Yeah.
I consider Mark to be, we're not close friends, but I'm friendly with him. But I don't want to not discuss that, because I happen to be an attorney and I work with the DA's office.
Right,
and stuff.
Right.
So what is some of the criticism that you've heard over since he went into office?
Well, I mean, the obvious ones are they're not winning cases. I mean, that's kind of the thing that stands out more than anything else. And there has also been this incredible turnover that they've had among their staff. And so,
and it continues. They just lost Roxanne and Lisa Bairstow, Roxanne Escobal and Lisa Bairstow. What was the word on those departures?
Well, not much. I mean, what we're getting from, you know, his new chief of staff is that this is streamlining, that, you know, this is making the office more efficient. Some have pointed out that it seems to be a lot of women who end up on the wrong end of the pink slips. I think all of that is fair question for what I expect will be a very spirited election, maybe in a primary, but certainly in a general.
All right. So is there a question of competence that people have raised, that these cases that they should have won, or are they cases that, and we do have a phone call here, but they're cases that would have been hard to win, but they ended up losing it?
Well, I mean, listen, I wasn't sitting in the courtroom listening to, so I'm not qualified to answer that question,
okay,
to be honest with you.
I've got the caller on the line. Who's this?
It's Karen. I have a question.
Yeah, go ahead.
Why would Mr. D'Antonio bring Mr. Gutierrez in, Mick Gutierrez in? If you look at Mr. Gutierrez's background, he's had a multitude of jobs. I mean, like in different cities, that he's never stayed at for very long. So he's like hopscotched everywhere for different jobs that he hasn't held for long. So how can he come in and be the person put in charge to rearrange the DA's office when it doesn't seem, and I don't know if the word stable
yeah.
is right, but it's always odd when you have somebody come in that's had multiple jobs, numerous states, that hasn't stayed very long at any of them.
Well,
the short answer to the question is he could do that because he's an elected official. And you know, as we're seeing with the treasurer's office, you have enormous powers when you are an elected official. But those are all fair questions that I'm sure will come up when he runs for reelection.
Okay. Just wanted to put it out there. People look at his background. It's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, Karen, thank you for the call. Have a good
Thanks.
Day. I've got, I don't know what's going on to this board here, but I somehow turned on all the phone lines at once, but I asked Mark to come on the show, and he stood me up the last two times. And the last time he sent me a text, I'm on a vacation all this week.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, you know, that's. I mean, I didn't burst into tears.
I hope he will come back on at some point, though, because, you know, he is obviously the one who has to answer all of those questions.
He's the top law enforcement official in town, and I've, you know, I mean, anybody who comes on the show, I try to be polite to him, but, I mean, I think that there are some legitimate questions out there that it would be in his interest to put a his answer to.
I agree.
So, all right, folks, Kelly here, and I've got Walt Rubel from the Sun News, and we're going to be right back. You're listening to AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. It's about a little bit over 40 degrees out there, and going to be a nice day. We'll be right back. Kelly, and I've got to Walt Rubel here from the Sun News on 1450 KOBE in Las Cruces. And so, Walt, what any feedback on the tax hike? Has anybody said much?
The county tax hike?
Yeah.
You know, it's a frustrating thing because they were shot down twice by the voters. And so, yeah, I think people are saying a lot. But it was, you know, this is kind of me going back to a beat up on Susanna day, but, you know, once again, that was a product of the legislature that gave the city and the county and every other municipal government in the state the ability to raise the gross receipts tax without a vote of the people. And so the county held off for a year or so before doing it. The city jumped right away. But I don't think there was ever a question that the county was going to do it and that they were going to do it for the full 3/8. I think Julia Brown signaled that pretty clearly before they took the vote, and you know, it was kind of a done deal.
So do you, how do you feel about this fact that they did vote on it and said no a couple of times?
Yeah.
And then the county went in and did it anyway.
No,
doesn't it communicate that the county is kind of above and beyond the people?
Of course it does. Yeah. I mean, that's exactly what it communicates. And so, you know, once again, well, there will be elections, but a lot of, you know, Billy Garrett will be term limited. That is one difference between county positions and others, is that there is a 2-term limit.
Do you personally think the term limits are a good idea?
You know, I think they work better for some positions than others. I'd like to see it at the city. I think it works at the state level. I think it works where you have the executive that has a term limit and you have the legislature where you have some old horses like John Arthur Smith and Mary Kay Papin who, you know, have been in there forever and know how to work the system.
All right. Now, there was someone who had contacted me about wanting to recall Mark D'Antonio, speaking of which, and I mentioned it to him and he just laughed, but it had to do with Sunland Park. What happened or what's going on down in Sunland Park that we can say contributed to this dissatisfaction with the DA?
Well, that case has been stalled, and we're talking about you know, mainly the case against Daniel Salinas, the man who won the election for mayor but was unable to be sworn in because
he was in a jail cell.
Yeah, he was in a jail cell, exactly.
That could have been, we should have done it like a prison wedding.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Well, I'm censoring myself. I was going to say something that would have been in politics there about Sunland Park getting what they deserve. But it seems like that there's going to be some kind of settlement reached on that case fairly soon is what we're hearing, and that has been part of the reason for some discontent at the district attorney's office.
And so Paul left the district
attorney. Paul Rubino.
Yeah, had left the district attorney's office. He was terminated, correct, or he quit?
I'm trying to remember how they put that to us. I don't remember, so I shouldn't say. I remember we reported that, but it's been a little while ago, and I just don't remember how
I had him on the show. He was, you know, he's a nice guy. He's a little bit, his personality's a little bit prickly, but people that I know say that he was a highly ethical person.
Yeah, very ex-military, and so very much that, you know, that style.
And that supposedly, and I don't know, I mean, I've heard, I guess, a little bit of confirmation off the record that one of the reasons that he left was because of the plea deal that was offered to Danny Salinas.
Yeah, yeah, we've heard that too, but we haven't been able to get either side to confirm that.
Mm-hmm.
But we've heard that as well.
Well, I've got some friends at the DA's office and people that I think very highly of, some of the nicest and best people in town, but there has been, since the beginning of Mark's term, there's been a certain amount of turmoil. And how have you looked at it?
Well, we were talking about it just the other day. And, you know, one of the things that could be said in his defense is, well, you know, you're always going to have holdovers from the other administration who aren't going to be
dead enders.
Almost made it through the whole show without coughing.
You got a little allergy?
Yeah,
or what?
I do have a big allergy. Yeah. But anyway, those folks were swept out early on. And so these are his own people now who are leaving. And so, you know, that does say something about your leadership when you have this kind of turnover. And it's not just, you know, cleaning out people who are unhappy because their person lost the election.
Yeah.
you know, we're beyond that point now.
Yeah. I like Mark. I think he's a nice guy, and he is, you know, he's always been very pleasant with me, and I don't think it's because I have a radio show. I think it's just
My interactions with him have been exactly the same. We just had a forum that I did with NMSU on for Sunshine Week, looking at the transparency of records after police shootings, and he agreed to sit on the forum with us, which I was a little bit surprised, but every time I've had an interaction with him, it's been the same. I mean, he is an intelligent, personable guy.
Very much so. And I ran into him and had lunch with him a couple of weeks ago. And then I had I'd called a number of times over to the DA's office and asked his secretary if they'd get him to come on the show. And that is going back months and months and months. And then he set up these two times to come on, and then he stood me up the one time to make it up to me, and then he was on vacation. So it's starting to feel like he doesn't want to come on the show.
Well, and that is one thing I'll say. One of the first things he did was put in a gatekeeper where, you know, our reporter can't call up and talk to him. We got to go through the gatekeeper.
Yeah.
And so, you know, looking at it from my perspective, that never sits very well.
All right, so we were talking yesterday, and I got some calls in on atheism. Any opinions on atheism?
Atheism, I'm for it if that's what they want to be, you know?
You believe in the freedom of religion?
Certainly.
Is atheism,
and from.
Atheism, I guess, is a religion, in a
it
sense.
It can be.
Yeah,
I hadn't thought about that, but I guess it can be.
Richard,
certainly there are people who are very devoted to it. There are people who are as devoted to atheism as there are people devoted to religion.
Yeah, Richard Dawkins' name comes up a lot. There are these four horsemen of atheism, supposedly. I saw a little picture of them, but...
The only one I can remember was the woman with the Irish name, and
Flannery O'Connor.
Was that it?
No, she's the famous writer.
Oh, okay.
But O'Hara, the woman that, you know, she had a very, this is the lady that was, I think, fought the case against prayer in school.
I believe so. Yeah. I mean, I have this vague, you know, I'm trying to think of famous atheists throughout history, but she is the one coming, you know, bubbling to the top.
Well, she bubbled down below the top because there was this very weird story. She ended up being murdered.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, and I can't remember the details, but it was very sordid. All right, so we're going to get you back here on next Tuesday.
Sure, I'd love to come back.
Okay. Folks, Walter Rubel, I want to thank you for coming on from the Sun News.
Yeah, you bet.
Very interesting.
I'm starting to wake up as we get to the end of the hour.
Absolutely. Anyway, Kelly here, thanks for listening in. It is 7:58, rolling into 7:59. It's AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. If you want to listen to the show, a copy of the show, then go to Blog Talk Radio and look my name up, and there's a copy of the show there. You can podcast or download it, whatever they call it. And anyway, it's going to be around 70 high today and a low tonight of around 50, so it'll be a little bit warmer than it was last night. And I'll take you out with a little Billy Joel. Have a great day. Talk to you in 22 hours. Ciao.